Okay, good morning, everyone. I'm going to apologize that my voice is still in the post-Simchas Torah blues. I didn't want to cancel the Shia, so I apologize. Hopefully, I'll still be able to croak through it. Okay, Bereishis, brand new beginnings of Soloveitchik. This is actually the most this Chumash has to say on any Parsha. But the Shia is still just going to be 45 minutes, so we got to see what we can cram in over here. At the beginning of Soloveitchik develops the idea very simply. Bereishis bara Elokim, as the Shemayim es Aretz, that the Torah begins with Hashem creating everything. Hashem created everything, yesh me'ayin, which means, and some of the commentaries say that on the first day, Hashem first created this matter out of which he then on the next few days formed everything else. But even if you say that, at the end of the day, it was still Hashem who created the matter itself. And Rav Soloveitchik quotes the pasuk in Tehillim, which we have said many, many times over the last month. It's Marl David. LaShem ha'aretz umloa tevel v'yoshveva. HaKadosh Baruch Hu owns the land and everything in it. Why? Ki hu al yamim yisada v'al naharos v'chonena. Because it was he who established the world on the oceans, and he made the land, and he made everything in it. So Rav Soloveitchik says as follows. The Gemara has a dispute in Maseches Bava Kama whether uman kona b'shvach kli, which means when a craftsman, you give the craftsman gold and you tell him to form a necklace out of the gold. So there's a dispute. How do we view what he owns? You just pay him for the service? Or no, he becomes like an owner because he changed the form of it. He becomes an owner. So Rav Soloveitchik says, although there is a difference of opinion regarding a human craftsman, there is no controversy when discussing the master, the creator of the world. The master of the universe unquestionably owns the world by virtue of his having created it, precisely because the world was created yesh me'ayin, something from nothing. A craftsman, you give him gold, so there's a question whether or not he's considered the owner, because he didn't make the gold. But when it comes to the Ribbono Shel Olam, whatever you create, you own. He both created the raw material and also formed it into the world as we know it. There can thus be no contender for ownership rights. But then he says, and here's the moral message for us. The moral message of creation, yesh me'ayin, is that all of a person's organs, talents, and capabilities actually belong to God and are only on loan to humanity from Him. With every sin man commits, he misuses that which has been lent to him and thus, in a sense, forgoes his very right to existence. Living a life of sin is thereby an act of theft and extortion. I heard Rabbi Lamb once speak about this at a Yom Kippur that I was at YU for back in the day. And I remember he talked about how the Dor HaMabul lo nechtam gzar dinam el ala gezel. We'll see if anyone mentions it next week in Parshas Noach. That somehow every sin has a little bit of theft in it. Because God gave you eyes for a certain reason and you use them for something else. So you're stealing the eyes. God gave you hands for X and you're doing a Y. God gave you legs. We say that in the Tefillah Zaka. For those who said before Yom Kippur, you say that, right? You gave me legs to run to do a mitzvah and I used them to run to do the wrong thing. You gave me. So the idea of Hashem creating the world, the moral and Musar idea behind the Kodesh Baruch creating the world is that if God created the world and He created everything, He created us and He gave us our marching orders, so by definition, He gave us life to be used in a certain way. So if we use it the other way, we're stealing and we don't really deserve to be created. Because if Hashem created us, He deserves to have His word listened to. This is also the idea behind... Morning, Herbie. Good morning. This is also the idea behind Anochi Hashem Elokecha Sheyotzei Sicha Me'eretz Yisrael Beis Avodim. I am Hashem, your God, I took you out of Egypt, because I took you out of Egypt and formed you as a nation. Therefore, I have a right. I made you. I have a right for you to demand that you live in a certain way. So when we're thinking about creation this Shabbos, let's remember if Hashem created us, He has a right to tell us what to do with that which He created. Let's continue. V'ha'aretz ha'isa sohu vavohu. Yes. He says like this. Quotes the Medrash. So gam heilin nivra yidei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Even the primordial amorphous matter, the Heli, was also part of creation. I want to go into that. Basically, the Ramban and others developed the idea that Bereishis Baruch Hu v'sa Shemayim v'sa Aretz. In the beginning, God created this matter out of which He formed the whole Shemayim and the whole Aretz. Science cannot postulate, nor even address the origin of matter. The concept of Yesh Me'ayin, something from nothing, is not scientific, rather metaphysical. Plato could not accept the possibility that physical matter was created by a spiritual being. Aristotle likewise believed that matter predated creation. They insisted that God could only be a Yotzer, a fashioner of pre-existing matter, and not a Bore, the creator of matter itself. Religiously, he says again, it matters greatly whether or not one accepts the notion of Yesh Me'ayin, because it suggests that God is omnipotent and that He is the master of the universe, which He directs in accordance with His will. Creation is an assurance of His enduring involvement with the universe and with man in particular, whose very existence depends on His continuous support. Good morning, Reb Nissen.
Rabbi.
To deny the concept of Yesh Me'ayin is to posit a dualism, allowing for the eternal existence of something besides God. Such a limited God... There you go, Joel. You got a good seat for you, Joel. Such a limited God is not, however, the God of Israel, whose existence predates everything. And here's where he says the line that really struck me. We'll see how it strikes you. But again, he's saying that the fact that God created the world, Yesh Me'ayin, means that the whole sustenance and existence of everything in the world, it's not that God just created it and then let it go. In order for it to exist, He has to continuously be forming it and shaping it and creating it. Look what he says. Although man cannot create ex nihilo, man cannot create something from nothing. Only God can do that. We can't do that. Although man cannot create Yesh Me'ayin, the spiritual message behind the story of creation is that man too must be creative. I apologize that my voice is still in the post-Simchas Torah blues. Man too must be creative. Man must conquer disease, control rivers, and alleviate misery. It's our job to fix the world. Like God created the world, we're supposed to imitate Him and also fix the world. Man must also educate. This is a little of a lesson to me, but listen to what he says. Education is creativity par excellence. An undisciplined child, comparable to the formless tohu vavohu, is transformed into a spiritual personality. A moral principle follows from this article of faith. The creation narrative challenges man to create. So on the one hand, we have, if God, the first thing we said is that if God created man, that means God has a right to dictate to man how to use creation. And we have our marching orders. He told us how He wants us to use our bodies, our world. He told us how He wants, how I want you to use the world, how I don't want to use the world. I created you. I created it. I have a right to tell you how to use it. That's A. B, if I'm a creator, man, as an imitator of Hashem, has an obligation to create as well. We have to come up with the cures for disease. We have to help poverty. We have to create human beings. By raising children in the right way, we're actually creating them. Not only are we actually physically joining God as a partner in creation, But in educating them, we have to do our best to educate, because when you educate, you can take someone who would not be going in the right direction and educate them and teach them the right path. So he says, education is creativity par excellence. Very, very powerful. Rav Soloveitchik was known to develop this theme many, many times. And again, he always quotes that other Gemara in Bava Kamma, about Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli, that there's a machlokis in Bava Kamma. If you give gold to a craftsman and he makes jewelry out of it, is the craftsman considered an owner of the jewelry? You just have to buy the jewelry back? Or no, you're just paying him for a service. Machlokis in Bava Kamma. How do you view it? The nafkamina difference would be, let's say he loses it in the middle. Who loses it? The Gemara in Bava Kamma has a whole discussion about that. Who takes the loss? Again, we are obviously assuming, I think in our common business model, we assume, no, you own the gold if you give him the gold. So now just because he formed a new thing out of it, so you paid him to do a job. But there's this question above a comment about that. So he says the same thing with education. If you form somebody and make somebody and create somebody, you own him in the sense that you created him. You can make somebody yesh me'ayin even in on the educational realm. Absolutely. Rav Soloveitchik develops that many, many, many times. I think in last week we talked about the only power that Judaism really recognizes. I think we spoke about that. Oh, maybe I know. I learned this over here. Maybe I Zos HaBracha. We didn't do Zos HaBracha. He talks about how the only power that Judaism really realizes is the power of a teacher. Again, I know I'm a rabbi, so I'm a little, maybe I'm no Gebe Dabur over here, but he says Judaism, the king. As if, you know, the king was like almost like a b'di'evet, you know, to be like the goyim. The king doesn't really have power in Judaism. We believe the king doesn't really have so much power. The king, the fact that a king has power is like an accommodation that we wanted to be like the goyim. So God said, okay, I'll let you have it. But the real Gemara says man malchei rabbanan, Torah scholarship. That's where we put our respect. That's where we really put the major focus. Now here's a beautiful pshat. This is very, very important. Everybody talks about this, but it's a lot easier to talk about this than to actually do this. So let's talk about this for a while. On the pasuk, v'ha'aretz ha'isa sof avo, there's a medrash. And I bring you the medrash over here. It's right on the top of the page. Amar Rabbi, I don't know who that is, Yehuda, Yitzchak, Yosef, put in whatever name you want, Yaakov, Bar Simon. Hold on. Where's that other medrash? One second. Where is that? No, I don't have that. Okay. Where is that? Wait a minute. See, it is here. Okay. Right. I'm sorry. Here we go. Amar Rabbi Yaakov Bar Simon, Yehi Erev Enksiv Kan, Elavayi Erev, Mikan, Shalya Seder Zmanim Kodum Lachay. Amar Rabbi Yavo, Malami, this teaches us. It doesn't say Yehi Erev, Vayhi Erev, which means apparently there were other days and evenings prior to this. And there was an Erev, meaning this was another one. There were other ones beforehand. It doesn't just say God said, let there be an evening. It says Vayhi Erev, which means, and there was an evening, which means it was just another long list in a list of mornings and evenings. So Amar Rabbi Avoh, the Medrash quotes an opinion that says, Malamed, Shehaya Bore Olamos Umachriva, that before this world, God created many, many other worlds and destroyed them because he did not view those other worlds as fit for humanity. Ad Shebaras Elu, until he finally created this one. Amar Dein Anayin Li, Yasad Lo Anayin Li, this is the world that I want. The other ones I didn't want. Amar Biz Tamidu Avo Vayalakim is Kol Asher Asavi Nito Mood, Dein Anayin Li, Yasad Lo Anayin Li. So the question is a few things. Number one, what in the world does it mean that God created something he didn't like? What do you mean? God is God. He's perfect. He should have got it right the first time. And why is the Medrash telling us this? Why is this important for us to know? That God built worlds and created them before he came to this one. So Soloveitchik says something so beautiful and so powerful and so important, but so very difficult to actually live by. Listen to his beautiful words on this. At first glance, this medrash seems almost absurd. When man builds something, he may be dissatisfied with his initial design, destroy it, and start over. why would omniscient God need to engage in such experimentation, building worlds and then destroying them? So Salvador says so beautifully. This medrash speaks to the imperative of v'halachta b'drachav, that we are supposed to imitate God and walk in God's path. Just as God builds and destroys, so must we. Parshas Bereishis not only challenges man to be a creator, a builder, but it challenges man, when necessary, to rebuild as well. For example, very famously, Rabbi Akiva taught Torah to 24,000 students who all died within a very short period of time. The Gemara describes the result of this catastrophe as V'haya ha'olam shamim. The Gemara in Yavama says, Shneimasar elef zugos talmidim ha'olam l'Rabbi Rabbi Akiva V'chulam mesum mei atzeres mea pesach v'ad atzeres V'haya ha'olam shamim, and the world was desolate from Torah until he decided to teach another five students. Yet Rabbi Akiva persevered until he restored the glory of Torah to its former splendor, engaging in v'halachta b'drachav, imitating and emulating God who created worlds after they were destroyed. Our history is replete with worlds created and destroyed. Jewish communities and Torah scholarship in Bavel, in the Byzantine Empire, Spain, Poland, and Germany. Following the destruction of one world, a new one was born. Our survival, our ability to persevere in the face of hardship and to rebuild are founded upon this midrashic principle. The saga of Jewish history is implied in this medrash. How unbelievable is this? Rav Salvechik sees this one-line throwaway medrash and he says, this medrash is the key and secret to all of Jewish history. I mean, you and I would have read this medrash and said, okay, it's a nice medrash, but like, unbelievable. Unbelievable, but like the lesson, that even when things are difficult, right, that's very difficult for a person. It's very, very hard. When people face challenges in life and they feel distant from the Ribbono Shlom over the challenges, it's very hard to pick yourself up and rebuild often. It's easy to talk about it. Everybody talks about it. Everybody, all the time. Yeah, you got to pick yourself up in the face of tragedy. I paid a shiva call this week to somebody. Paid a shiva call. Relatively young man passed away. And the woman who was sitting shiva said, listen, it was so sudden, just on Yom Kippur. We were dancing together with my father. It was such a, you know, it was just on Yom Kippur. We haven't, and like so sudden, and you know what she said? She said, you know, my father accepted everything that came his way in life. He accepted it. He accepted it, and he didn't complain. And he had this problem, and that problem, and the third problem, and the fourth problem, and the fifth problem, and this health issue, and this family issue, and this. And he never, he smiled, he complained, he always took it. So who am I? I'm going to start complaining. My father taught us, you have to accept it. So I said, yeah, so your father was a good teacher. He taught you well. But that's what he's saying here. Your world is destroyed. You have to rebuild something else. You have to rebuild. You can't just wallow in the destruction and complain and say, how come my world was destroyed? You got to figure out a way to pick up and rebuild. That's the lesson of this medrash. Rav Salvechik said, that's all of Jewish history. We had a Holocaust a few years ago. Look at us now. You would think that people would be wiped out for that. You would forget it. What we went through, what our grandparents, what they went through, our parents and grandparents, what they went through, many of us. But the Jew understands, even when a world gets destroyed, we have to rebuild. You knock down the sukkah, this week is the week of knocking down the sukkah. You build a sukkah, you knock down the sukkah. You build a sukkah, sukkah is a flimsy thing. You knock it down, you rebuild it, you knock it down. Every year it gets knocked down, we rebuild it. Let's continue in a very similar way. Oh, two other beautiful, there's so much this week, so much beautiful stuff. Two other beautiful, beautiful ideas coming up over here. Again, I never would have said this in a million years. So famous medrash that Rashi quotes. So what did God create on day one? Light. Vayomer Elokim Yi'ar Vayi'ar. Vayar Elokim Es'ar Ki Tov. God saw the light was good. Vayavdil Elokim Ein'ar V'Nechoshech. So what does Rashi famously say? What does it mean? He saw the light was good and he separated between the light and the dark. What does that even mean? What do you mean? If he saw the light was good, so what's he separating? If the light is good, so keep it here. Says the Medrash, no. Look at Rashi, page 1. Af bezeh onot tzrichim l'divrei Haggadah. Ra'ahu she'eino kedai l'shtamish bo rishayim. God saw that the light of the world was so good, it wasn't kedai to let the wicked people of this world benefit from that light. So God put away that light, and it's going to be for the tzaddikim in the end of time, in the end of days, that light is going to be for the tzaddikim in the future. He didn't want the rishayim who are around in this world to benefit from this light. Okay, we've all heard this medrash many times. Very nice. What does that do for me, this medrash? So if Soloveitchik took this medrash and flipped it on its head and gave it a lesson for each of us every single day of our lives in this life. That's the goyness and the brilliance that I'm so blown away by every time I see it. It takes the medrash, we all heard the medrash a million times. But what does it mean? How does the medrash help you live your life today, this medrash? Very nice. There's going to be a nice light for the tzaddikim lost lover. What does that do for me today? Look what he says so beautifully. Rashi maintains that the aura discussed here does not refer to the electromagnetic phenomenon of light. Okay, so that's the first thing. Rashi says we're not talking about the bulb. That's not the light that he's talking about here. Because this light is actually right here, right now. It wasn't put away for the tzaddikim lasid lavo, this beautiful halogen over here, whatever. The light referred to in this verse was something that was too good for mankind at that time. So God reserved it for the future. This light will be the source of illumination for the righteous, for the tzaddikim, the age of redemption. As the pasuk says in Yeshayahu, which I have for you in the source sheets over here, Kumi ori kiva oreich ukvod Hashem alayich zarach. Wake up, shine, because your light has come. And the honor of Hashem is going to shine on you. That's talking about the vision of Zman Mashiach. That's going to be the light that Rashi's talking about. Even now, however, said Rav Soloveitchik, and here's the Chiddush. Even now, said Rav Soloveitchik, each person is endowed with some degree of this metaphysical illumination. I don't know where he saw this in the Medrash. The Medrash says only give me the future. Rav Soloveitchik said, the light of Ruchnius, the spiritual light of Hashem, while the majority of it is in the future, Lasid Lavo, there's a piece of it that every person is endowed with today, every single day. God implanted this aura in the inner recesses of each person. And he affirms in our pasuk that this spiritual light is good, that something inherently redeeming resides in the human personality. The Kabbalah portrays man's inner light as nitzotzos, sparks, which can never be completely extinguished. In the world to come, this clear light will emerge from out of the darkness that envelops it, and all the hidden potential within the heart of each person will emerge. But says Rav Soloveitchik, it's not like we never get to taste this light in this world. It'll be in its full glory in the next world. But the light that Rashi is referring to is the light of the soul, the light of the neshama. So in the future, the light of the neshama will shine for everybody. But every single day when we do a ma'isa mitzvah, when we do a ma'isa chesed, when we study Torah, when we learn, when we help somebody out, we get a little taste of that light of Lasid Lavo. So what's amazing to me about this is he took a medrash that seems to only be referring to the world to come, but we know we get a little taste of the world to come. Every Shabbos we get a taste of the world to come. And every day when a person does a little bit of mitzvah, he does a chesed, he tastes that light. The light is that feeling that you have when you do a mitzvah, when you study Torah, when you do the right thing, when you help somebody out who needs help. That's we get a little taste of that light also. Beautiful. Oh. And along the lines of what we just had beforehand, again, Vayi'er Vayivoker. Take a look at the next medrash I have over here on the page one. Medrash from Bereishis Rabba. Vayavdil al kiminor v'nachoshech, says the medrash, God divided between the light and the darkness. Bein ma'aseim shel tzadik v'le ma'aseim shel rishoyim. Vayikor lekim la'or yom elu ma'aseim shel tzadikim. V'lachoshech kara layla elu ma'aseim shel rishoyim. So the medrash already says that light and darkness in the first day of creation is not just talking about actual light and darkness, right? When we're in first grade, so the teacher says, what did God create on the first day? Day and night. The Medrash says, no. The Pasuk's talking about not physical day and night. It's talking about that there's such thing on the first day God wanted to set in the world already, that there's such thing as light actions and there's such thing as dark actions. Light actions are mitzvahs, dark actions are sins. That's also referred to Vayera Vayivoker. That's what the Medrash says. That's where Rav Soloveitchik is quoting this Medrash. You'll see in a minute where he's going with this. Vayi erev elu maseim shel rishoyim, vayi voker elu maseim shel tzadikim. Yom echad, vayi erev vayivoker yom echad, shenasad lam HaKadosh Baruch Hu yom echad, ve'ezeh zeh yom HaKippur. Yom echad, the day number one, doesn't say yom HaRishon, right? It says Yom Sheni, Shlishi, Revi, Chamishi. But the first day doesn't say Yom Rishon. It says Yom Echad. One day, says the Medrash. What's the one day that symbolizes Vayi Erev, Vayi Voker? Yom Kippur. Said Rav Soloveitchik, what does this mean? And why does Judaism believe, unlike the rest of the world believes, that the night follows the day? Right? What's today? October 26th? I don't even know. Fifth. So October 25th has the night following the day. Tonight at 10 o'clock at night, it's still October 25th. But by Jews, it's Vayi Erev, Vayi Voker. Why is that, says Rav Soloveitchik? Based on this medrash, that Erev refers to wicked actions, and Voker refers to righteous actions. Zokt Rav Soloveitchik Hazoi, listen. Evening is referred to Erev, since it connotes Erev is irbuvia, confusion, which leads a person to sin, darkness, confusion. Man often gropes in the darkness, sensing that his spiritual light has been extinguished. This verse assures him that this corruption and confusion is not indefinite. There's always a morning that follows the day. Vayi erev, vayivoker, yom echad, and which day highlights this more than any other? It's Yom Kippur. Look what he says. This pasuk assures that this corruption and confusion is not indefinite. That erev cannot categorize the entirety of the human personality and experience. While darkness may temporarily infiltrate the individual, a minute spark, the boker, remains pure and incorruptible. The Medrash, which I just quoted to you, presents a view that Yom Echad is a reference to Yom Kippur. That one special day, Yom Echad, Yom Kippur. The message is that without Yom Kippur, a day of renewed commitment to Hashem, the world itself would not have been created. There is a spark of the divine in man that is inextinguishable. And through this spark, mankind will ultimately accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will. So Yom Kippur is the raya that there's always going to be a morning after the night. If we could all get together and daven on Yom Kippur and proclaim Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem Hu Elokim, and work and fast and do tshuva and change. So there's always hope And for a human being has to always believe personally that there's always going to be a boker after his erev. Even if he feels like he's involved in the erev of sin, of confusion, of I'm not doing the right thing, I don't understand how to do the right thing, there's always going to be a boker afterwards.
Can you just say the Yom Kippur, how it ties in again one more time?
Thank you for asking. Because you're right, it's not evident. What I think he means is like this. Erev Ivoker, he's understanding Erev and Voker like the Medrash says. Erev and Voker doesn't just mean night and day. It means the dark times of a person's life and the light times. Yom Kippur is the time, is the guarantee that there's always going to be like Yom Kippur as a day of tshuva, as a day of return, as a guarantee that you're not going to be wallowed in darkness forever. Yom Kippur takes man and says, you have a future. You have a boker. You have this tshuva. You can become better. You can return. You're always going to be close to me. I'm giving you this one day a year to guarantee that whatever happened in the past, the Erev is done and there's going to be boker. That's my Erev Ivoker Yom Echad. Yes?
Isn't that following the same theme you talked about rebuilding?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's 100%. Exactly. Absolutely. You're right. If I wasn't going in the order of Pesukim, I should have said this thing right after that thing. True. I like to sometimes go in the order of Pesukim because I don't forget stuff, but... But you're right. On topically, it follows Mamish beautifully. Okay.
Saying darkness is its own thing also, as opposed to just an absence of light.
Good. That's right. Darkness is, for the Rav Soloveitchik, darkness is metaphysical. Exactly. It's a period of darkness. And we all go through those periods of darkness. Oh, now, I was talking to Avi before, I said Parsha Bereishis, favorite Parsha. So much in Bereishis, right? And Rav Soloveitchik, so many famous ideas of Rav Soloveitchik are found in Bereishis. So one of the most famous ones, I'm sure some of you have heard this idea, but again, he quotes it in the Chumash, so beautiful. Now, on day number 4, maybe it's 3, we've been talking about light and darkness. When did God create the sun and the moon? Day 4, right? Let's take a look in the Chumash. Vayas Elokim Es Shnei HaMa'oros HaGedolim. On page 2. Pasuk Tezai. Vayas Elokim Es Shnei HaMa'oros HaGedolim. God made two big luminaries. But then he says, one was big and one was small. Es HaMa'or HaGedolim Memshelos HaYom. Es Har Makaton Memshelos HaLayla. So Rashi quotes the famous Medrash. That the moon and the moon was protesting, so God made the moon smaller. But there's a very, very famous Rav Soloveitchik Vart that a lot of people say at a bris, because by a bris we say Ze hakaton gadol yiyah, Ze hakaton gadol yiyah. So again, we all hear this bracha. It's a funny bracha. What the kid now is very little; he should be big. Shkoyach, I mean, doesn't every kid start off being little and be big? This is what we're blessing him. He now weighs 6.2 pounds, ounces, whatever. He should grow up to be a zaftige mensch. No. There's got to be more in the blessing than that. So the famous Vartner of Salvation. Says so beautiful. The sun is called the Ma'ara Gadol, and the moon is called the Ma'ara Kata. The sun is called the great light, and the moon is the minor light. Said of Salvation, why is the sun called the great light and the moon called the minor light? Said of Salvation, because the sun generates its own light and the moon, as we know, doesn't have any of its own light. It only reflects the light of the sun. So we're already telling this baby at a bris of Salvation. Zeh katan gadol yiyeh. When a child is born, it doesn't have any of its own light. It can only reflect the light of its parents, its teachers. When a kid is young, he's a katan. He doesn't know anything himself. He doesn't have any of his own spark. He's just reflecting. Rav Soloveitchik said, at bris, what do we bless the kid? Zeh katan gadol yiyeh. Now you're a katan. Now you're only reflecting other people's light. We bless you. You should be zocha to radiate your own light. You should become your own Eved Hashem, your own radiator of light, your own projector of light. Don't just reflect, but you should shine on your own.
Be a sunshine.
Be a sunshine, right. The moon has no source of light. It's only merely reflects light. The sun, a cut and receives while a gadol gives. Now let's come back to that theme again. We're giving and receiving, because this is one of the big things. They will close with this. A katan receives while a gadol gives. It is thus traditional at a bris to express the wish, Zeh katan gadol yeh. This katan, who is now but a receiver, should ultimately grow up to be a gadol, a giver. And let's talk about giving and receiving, because this is a very important theme in life that over the 17 years of this year we talk about a lot. About how we're talking about imitating Hashem, and Hashem is the ultimate giver. God doesn't have to take anything from us. He don't need nothing from us. He's the ultimate giver. He's a giver, giver, giver. He gives everything. His creation of the world was giving. He provides for us. He gives, gives, gives. And we're supposed to imitate Hashem and be givers as well. So let's skip a little bit. What does the pasuk say about the creation of man? Now, for those of you who are familiar with Rav Soloveitchik's teachings, so arguably the most famous thing Rav Soloveitchik ever said was on Bereishis, about the two accounts of creation, what has become known in the realm of philosophy as Adam 1 and Adam 2. The philosophers talk about that. So he talks about also how the creation of man and woman is very different than the first chapter of Bereishis and the second chapter. But we're going to focus, Adam 1 and Adam 2 is a lot about philosophy. We're going to focus a little bit more on the practical here, as we tend to do, because that's all I can understand. Let's take a look at the account of creation of man and woman in Perek Aleph. So Perek Aleph, it says, page 3, Vayomer Elokim Naaseh Adam. Vayivra, the very bottom pasuk, pasuk of Zayin. Vayivra Elokim Es Adam B'Tzalmo. Man, God created man in His image. B'Tzalam Elokim Baroso. Zachar Unikeva Baroso. And Rav Soloveitchik explains, simple pshat, that at first, when man was created, man and woman were created exactly the same, equal, as the same part of creation. Right? Rav Soloveitchik points out here, it's interesting that in the same pasuk you have, B'tzelem Elokim bara oso, Zachar unikeva bara oso. How do I express Tzelem Elokim? That I created man, Zachar unikeva. With both pieces, both Zachar unikeva. That's an expression of Tzelem Elokim. Sevel Soloveitchik, what's the juxtaposition here? What's the smichas? B'tzelem Elokim bara oso, Zachar unikeva bara oso. What does one have to do with the other? What does Zachar and Nekeva have to do with Tzelem Elokim? Listen to these beautiful words on this topic. It's probably going to be the last thing we're going to have time to do. What is the meaning of the juxtaposition of the reference to the image of Hashem with the creation of man as two sexes? In interpreting the phrase Zachar and Nekeva bara osam, male and female created them, Chazal explained that when Hashem initially created man, He created him in a dual form. Take a look at Rashi. Zachar unikeva bara osam. Shenivru shnei partzufim, Briya Rishona. Two-faced. Male and female in this context are to be taken not only in a physiological sense, but also in a spiritual, metaphysical one. Every soul consists of a spiritual androgyny, androgynous, a male and a female persona. The combination of these elements is known in rabbinic literature as duchra v'nukva. The male persona and the female persona, which can be found in every individual. Duchra refers to dynamic, active man, while nukva refers to affected, passive man. Man both influences and is influenced. He is both giver and receiver. Only in the biological world is man exclusively male or female. In the spiritual world, every individual carries both traits, and only through the development of both the duchra, the giver, and the nukva, the receiver perspectives, can individuals attain their full spiritual potential. Listen to this. For example, when a teacher instructs his students, he is the giver. Going back to that theme about the Rebbe being the ultimate. He is the giver, the male, the duchra, while his students, who absorb his ideas, are the female, the nukva. At one point in the lesson, however, a perceptive student may ask a particularly incisive question that leads the thoughts of the teacher in new directions. Indeed, Rabbi Chanina exclaimed, "Harbe lamadati mirabosai, v'yosa michaverai, umi talmidai yosa mikulam." I learned more from my students than anyone else. At this juncture, said Rav Soloveitchik, the duchra nukva roles are reversed. The student has planted a seed that blooms into a beautiful flower within the mind of the Rebbe. The young student, with eager eyes and an inquisitive expression, becomes a duchra, while the teacher with the gray beard and the august title of a Rav Agon is transferred into the nukva. Wow. That's a good teacher. He knows how to learn from his students. Who is the giver and who is the receiver? Who influences and who is influenced? As undeveloped as one's intellect may be, no one is exclusively a student. And as great as a person may be intellectually, no one is exclusively a teacher. The blessing that Hashem bestowed on man during creation operates in both the spiritual metaphysical realm as well as in the physical realm, actualizing the potential of duchra v'nukva is the greatest and most exalted of blessings. A person must actualize his nukva blessing to absorb spiritual wealth and bounty, to learn from everybody. A person must be a nekeva, to be a receiver, to get inspiration and to learn from everybody, from everything. Concurrently, he must actualize his duchra blessing by using his spiritual energies to give to others. The student who lacks a teacher, although born with great potential, cannot realize his potential as nukva. Similarly, sometimes a great teacher can lack students to absorb his wisdom, and he therefore cannot develop his potential as duchra. One spiritual personality is necessarily dependent on the other in order to develop as an elevated level of self-actualization. Unbelievable. All in one pasuk. B'tzelem Elokim baro so zachar nekeva. Now, it's not clear. So tzelem Elokim doesn't mean in the image of God, because God is only a giver. He doesn't take it all. But the idea is, it means, tzelem Elokim means part of man's spiritual personality needs to be developed both as a giver and a receiver. That God has the male and the female. So maybe when he withdraws from the world, right, he withdraws. Sometimes he has, Rav Soloveitchik has, right, that tzimtzum, the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to restrict himself to allow the world to be created, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mali filled everything. He had to, like, sort of take a step back to allow the world to be created. Maybe. Or Midas HaRachamim. Midas HaRachamim. Maybe that he allows certain things to go. He's passive. He doesn't right away attack in every scenario. But maybe I should have looked at the original. I don't have. I got to get that set as far as this. I have it somewhere. This is printed in. See, a lot of times here in this, he just quotes little snippets of it. I have to really get the whole more though. But again, I think what he means by Tzelem Elokim refers to the spiritual personality of a person. So yeah, Vayivra Elokim Es Adam B'Tzalmo, B'Tzelem Elokim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave each of us a Tzelem Elokim, which is developed both in a male way and in a female way. So this idea of giving and receiving is very important. So we learned so many important topics over here about building and receiving, about creating, about using all that Hashem created this world for the good. So hopefully it's gracious. We still all hopefully have the light, the spiritual light from Yom Kippur and Sukkot is still on us. You got a chaparai, the first Shabbos of the year, in a certain sense. This is the first Shabbos of the year, Bereishis. Let's try to guzzle up all the spiritual light of this Shabbos. It should be a good sign in a simon. That should be a year filled with light, a year filled with building, Bereishis, a year filled with growth, a year filled with developing our spiritual personalities, all aspects of them. Should be this way for us and for each of our families, and for all of Klal Yisrael. Thanks for coming. Hope to see you again next Shabbos. Ruchim to you.